Live from Los Angeles, it's the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights.
With tonight's guest, actor Ray Abruzzo.
Look at the night sky. Look at the night sky.
And musical guest, soprano Marinette Terre Kazarian. I am Mark Lejeune, and now your host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
Many of you have heard us talk about the recalibration here on the show many times. What we haven't mentioned in a while is the Life Improvement Workshop. And many of you know how that started. So I was taking an improv class and I had my life coaching hat on. I must have been on the phone or something as I was driving to the improv class. And then when I landed in the improv class, I couldn't get that life coaching hat off, I guess. And I watched everything that we did in improv and I thought, wait a minute, these people are actually telling us what's inside of them and things that they've seen. They're not going too far from what they've seen. And I was doing the same thing. The coach said to me, Filippo, stretch a little bit. So I did something. And then he said to the class, see how brilliant that was. And then I wanted to say to him, I don't know how brilliant it was. I was just being my aunt. You know, I mean, I was doing exactly what I saw happening. So that's how the Life Improvement Workshop happened. Well, or how it started. And today, or actually the past couple days, I've been inspired in a different way thanks to getting ready to interview our guest, Ray Abruzzo, who's a phenomenal actor and also one who's a conscious actor in the sense that he's conscious of what he's doing. And what I was inspired by, maybe I'll have to talk to him about this, but I feel like there's a workshop. It's kind of like I say about improv, that some of the most important improv moments don't happen on stage. They happen in our lives. And so too with acting. I recently did something on stage, and it was improvised, but I was asked to speak at something, and somebody says, wow, how do you do that? You're so good at that. It's the years of acting classes that I've taken, and speech classes, and improv classes, comedy classes. It's the years of all of that. And so I think there should be acting classes for life. Like, because Ray's going to tell us some stories today of how some of his great acting roles were not on camera. He's got some amazing acting roles on camera, both in the small screen and the big screen and on stage. But some roles he's had to play, nobody taught him how to do it, and he had to rely on something. What if we maybe learn how to act in life? As well as on, and not just on stage or on screen or on TV. I don't know. There's something here. And I know a lot of us are doing it already. We act like we're happy. We act like, you know, things are okay. But what if we actually learned how to act and then brought consciousness in and there's something there. There's just something there. And I'm inspired by our guest, Ray Abruzzo, who will be sharing some of his great stories and I'm sure inspiring you all as well when we come back after the show. And then live music here in the studio with Marinette Terre Kazarian. So looking forward to the show as we come up to it, all on the Life Changes Show right after this.
You are listening to the Life Changes Show, live from Studio NoHo on the BBS Radio Network. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as Marianne Williamson, Gary Anthony Williams, Sharon Stone, and Alex Gray on our archive page at lifechangesshow.com. Or you can visit us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We are back. I'm Filippo Voltaggio sitting here with Mark Lejeune.
You know, you said that they should have classes for life or life
we
classes.
Should.
We should.
Yeah.
Well, we do, but it's called childhood.
Oh. Right.
We're learning how to act like our mom or our dad or our brother or sister
wow.
or nanny
right?
or Or right? Yeah, that's where we get that programming. So it'd be neat to build classes going back to those types of principles.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure we'll all talk about it after the show.
There you go.
So there it is. Well, our guest is I love this. He doesn't say he's an Italian American actor. He says he's a Sicilian American actor from Queens, New York. And gosh, I mean the list from he was on Dynasty as a regular, The Practice as a regular, The Sopranos as Little Carmine. Lepertuzzi, and the list goes on. And actually, growing up, watching him on Night Court, what fun stuff. So anyway, and then so much small screen, big screen, and theater as well. What a pleasure to have him here. Re Abruzzo, welcome to the Life Changes Show.
Nice to be here, except I wish you hadn't started with watching you when I was growing up.
When we were growing up together, I should have said.
Oh, yeah. It sounded like, you know, it sounded like what I would say if, you know, Henry Fonda was here. Oh, I watched you growing up, you know, but okay, I'll let that one slide. It's okay. No, I am older than you. Let's get that officially stated.
There, thank you. But you're still the hot throb that you, the hot. Hot. Like I'm from Boston. I'm inspired to act all of a sudden.
Yeah.
That's a whole new kind of
a hot drop.
You were such a hot drop.
Well, I packed my cat, you know.
Okay, so I don't know where to start with you.
No, the heartthrob days are gone. Yeah, you know, I played a love interest on Night Court and on Dynasty.
Yeah.
That was a long time ago.
I've seen...
No, not so much anymore.
Okay.
But I do play actually love interest presently. We'll get back to that later. But I do a recurring role on Transparent, which is transformative and life-changing
in more
ways than, you know, if we're talking about life changes, a show that typifies life changes, nothing does it more than that show.
Actually,
but we can get back to that later.
No, we don't have to. I mean, that is so huge. I've seen a couple episodes.
It's amazing.
And it takes your world as you know it and totally turns it in a different way.
You know, I
and congratulations and more power to you and everybody.
I have a very small part on it. I've only done, I don't know, a handful of episodes, but they called me on a Wednesday night and asked me if I would guest star on the show Transparent. I had heard of it, but I didn't know much about it. So I said, yeah, sure. And I binged watched it because I had to go to the table read on Friday and this was Wednesday night. So from the first episode, I was just drawn in and thought, man, I've never seen anything like this
before.
Right,
that first episode, so there's a man who's the father of this family.
Jeffrey Tambor,
transitioning.
Right. He announces to his family at 70 years old that he's going to transition into a woman.
Right.
And then you learn that this has been in him since he was a child.
Right.
And it's based on a true story. Jill Soloway, the creator of the show, went through this with her father.
Oh, I didn't know
that. Wow. And the interesting thing about the show, there's several trans actors and actresses on the show. Jeffrey's the only cisgender that plays a trans person. All the other trans people are trans. So the
love interest that you have now, this is huge.
Yes.
Is a trans person.
As a trans woman. And okay. I'm pretty sure you've never seen it on TV or film before, where there's a relationship with a heterosexual cisgender male with a trans woman.
Yeah.
We've been together, or the backstory is for many years, 30 years or something, you know, where there is no guilt. It's not hidden. He lives out in the open with her. You know, it's not something he sneaks, you know, at night and you know, finds a prostitute on Hollywood Boulevard and does and has a husband, you know, a wife at home.
Right.
This is a completely open relationship, and it's just they go through the stuff that people in relationships go through. And to me, that was the most interesting aspect of this character, that it's not burdened with this secrecy and guilt. And
you play it very strongly. I've seen you, and it's
this stuff coming up the next season. I have a couple of episodes, but boy, I remember driving home after the first day I shot. I got on that set. It was like no other set I'd ever been on before. And this is going to sound weird, but I remember driving home thinking, you know what? I'm a little bit of a better person now driving home
than
I was when I drove to the studio in the morning. Because the crew, everybody is there. First of all, I've never been on a show where everybody is there really for an important purpose that they feel really connected to. Mm. And the show with the crew and the actresses and the actors and the writer, it's the full spectrum of human sexuality and gender identification represented in the crew and the writers and the actors. And it's just, it's so warm and loving and human. And it just, I just felt so much more open when I left as a person. I've been, you know, lived in a very liberal society in my world in the theater. And, but it was just, it's just, I'm so grateful for that experience that I actually feel like a better person now from a TV show.
And this is a fine example of what I was talking about at the beginning during the monologue, is that the role you take on in life now as the person who's here talking about this, because it could just be a role you play on TV, and yeah, I do that, and off we go.
Right. Well,
but instead, you've taken now on this role where you're educating all of us.
Right, and it's not like if I was on The Sopranos, I don't want to then, well, I'll be a hitman.
Yeah. You know? Oh, wait, you're on The Sopranos. That's right.
So. And you have a soprano coming on later.
Yes, exactly. Wow.
What a cool.
See how the universe works in mysterious ways. No, of course you were on The Sopranos. So it, completely different, I think, experience from what you're talking about right now.
Right, right. It's not a role that you're going to take home and say, oh, I'm going to live this life.
Actually, there was a little bit of a backlash because of The Sopranos and all of that we know. So we don't have to talk about all that. But actually, how did you handle that as an Italian-American? What did it feel like?
It was difficult. I'll tell you, I watched the show at first when it was first on. I thought, this is amazing. And then there was an episode where Ralphie kills a young stripper. And it was so horrific to me that I stopped watching the show.
Mm.
And I thought, I just can't watch this. These people are just too ugly. They're monsters. I can't watch this. And then I got the part, and then back to, well, this is the greatest show that's ever. So again, I went and I had to binge watch them all, and I got completely involved in it, and I understood what happened. And I understood that at that point, David Chase felt that the audience was being too enamored with these characters.
Ah.
They were admiring these characters. So he purposely had such a horrific moment for a character where people would remember that this is an ugly lifestyle, it's, you know. So I thought that was an important moment. And, I had relatives, of course, that wouldn't watch the show because of the way. And then I had other relatives that loved it so much and would just, they didn't like me because my character wasn't tough enough.
You get it from
you didn't whack anybody. What are you backing out of the family? You didn't. You know, it's a TV show.
Like it's a real thing.
Like it's a, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What was the allure to this acting thing?
Well, that's very interesting. My freshman year in high school, you had to sign up within the first week. There was a day for extracurricular activities, and each room had, you know, the speech club or some chess club or something. And I didn't know what I wanted to do. You know, I was with some friends, and one guy was going to go out for basketball because he was tall. Another guy played music. He was going to go into the band. I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I was walking down the hallway, and I saw a sign that said auditions today. So I looked in the auditorium, and the front row was filled with the prettiest girls in the school. So I literally
said, did you even know what the audition was?
I had no
for?
Idea. But I remember I saw these girls in the front row, and I said to my friends, you guys go ahead, I'm going in here. And I went in there and I sat down, and I was 4'11". I was like the second shortest kid in high school. I'm really tall now for the radio listeners. I'm about 6'8".
You're tall.
I'm like normal height.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
He's not 6'8".
No,
after all.
Okay. No.
Sorry. We don't lie on this.
Oh, damn. Oh, I got to go. So I went in and I auditioned for the play Inherit the Wind, and I got the part, and boom, that was it. Because the character, Howard Blair, if I remember, opens the play. And this was kind of a big high school auditorium. I remember the curtain opened and I was alone on stage, and I just felt this rush, and I thought, this feels right.
Wow.
And, you know, so that's where it started, and I just did it every chance I got from then till now.
Ray, you have a lot of interesting stories, and then that's how you got into acting, but how you actually went into professional acting is interesting as well. And when we come back, I'd love for you to share a little bit of that. And also a little bit about how this interview, what prompted me to say, hey, Ray, why aren't you telling your stories on our show, The Life Changes Show? So I kind of want to just touch on that because that's it's a horrible story, but it's
as many of mine are.
I didn't know where to laugh or cry. I'm like, oh, and now I want you to tell it.
Okay.
So there's that. I'll with Ray Abruzzo when we come back, and then of course we're gonna have a soprano, not one of the Sopranos, but she is one of those Sopranos, a soprano, a real live soprano here on our show, Marinée Terkazarian, a little later on. All of the Life Changes Show when we come back after this.
Listen to these words. He would not be beat by forces too fierce for man, woman, or beast. As the going got tougher, his courage increased. It's a little story with a big message, a message that speaks to children of all ages. It's about believing in yourself, overcoming obstacles, and never giving up. It's been called a masterpiece, one of the finest children's books ever written, and a true children's classic. Shadow Stevens has been called Dr. Seuss for the 21st century. His big little book, The Big Galoot, is a story about bullying. Bullying has become an American epidemic, and The Big Galoot talks about it in a way that will touch the heart of a child of 4 and a grandfather of 104. It's the story of a little boy with size 42 hands, the biggest hands anyone has ever seen, and the kids laugh at him. Then the laughter turns mean. They mock him and trip him, and much worse. But throughout it all, Warren Galoot says, "I'm a galoot, but I have good luck. You can't get me down. I never give up." A second grader named Chandler said, "I thought it was the best funny book I have seen in my life." And we agree. Whoopi Goldberg said, "This is a great story. Bravo, Shadow." The Big Galoot is available now as an ebook exclusively on Kindle Fire on Amazon for only $3.98. We strongly urge you to get it for your children, your children's children, or as a gift to yourself. Its message speaks to all of us. Have good luck and never give up. Go to Amazon.com and search for The Big Galoot by Shadow Stevens.
You are listening to The Life Changes Show, live from Studio NoHo on the BBS Radio Network. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as The Green Children, Dan Millman, Hot Rod Fuller, and Mike Marino on our archive page at lifechangesnetwork.com. You can also follow us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
And we're back. I'm Filippo sitting here with Mark and our guest, Ray Abruzzo. He is a film actor, stage actor, TV actor. He's best known for his roles in The Sopranos, Dynasty, and Night Court. And he's also done so much more, produced, et cetera, et cetera. And now, actually, he was just telling us during the break that he's done some behind-the-scenes stuff. Tell us why that's important.
Oh, yeah. Well, one of my first jobs, I was working. I did props for New York City Opera.
That
really, you learn a lot when you do props. You learn how to, as an actor, then learn you learn to respect
right.
every other job on the on the crew.
That's
because
important.
Opera singers could be a little testy about what you put there. I know this one here, not her. I didn't say every opera singer.
And she's a soprano.
So, well, they're the worst. They're the best.
Oh, sorry, Marinée.
So from that,
stick to the actors.
Okay, yeah. So I got promoted from props to playing a female gorilla in a children's opera called The Toy Shop. And that's how I got my union card.
I didn't see
that one coming.
I believe him.
Pauline. I even remember the character's name. Pauline. I wore a big blue gorilla costume with a big blue and white bow and a big blue and white dress.
And I come out to the audience.
I was also in The Barber of Seville.
Yeah.
I played a deaf mute.
Wow.
Yeah.
A deaf mute in an opera. Wow.
Yeah.
You get really creative
roles.
Yeah. Very interesting. Yeah. I mean, directors must have fun with you. Actually, speaking of, there's so much I want to talk. Okay, let's talk faster.
Okay.
I've
never been told that before.
Really?
Usually it's like slow down, right? Yeah.
No, because there's so much. There's a funny story about, is it Versailles?
What? Oh, The Sopranos.
Oh, that's The Sopranos. That's
the Sopranos
story.
Yeah, you have to tell that one. Okay. Well, I was asked for The Sopranos. They cast basically in New York, and occasionally they would have somebody put themselves on tape in those days, VHS tape. Uh-huh. I don't know if any listeners hold. There's a big plastic.
Yeah, we know. It's okay.
So I put myself on tape for a part of the guy that did the drug intervention for Christopher. It was a one scene part, and I didn't get it, and I was crushed. And they said, "No, they're saving you for something better." And I thought, "Yeah, sure. I've heard that a million times before." But the very next week, I got a call, and they said, "David Chase wants you to read for this part."
Who's the director for
producer creator? Producer, yeah, he created it. He's the guy.
Yeah,
that's why the show's so good, because it had a guy.
Yeah,
and it was his vision.
You gotta have it.
Yeah, well, some shows, there's so many hands in it, but it, you know, this was his vision, and then he brought in people that really shared his vision. So he thought I should read for this part of Little Carmine Lupertazzi, and I read the breakdown, and it said, Little Carmine, anything but little, upwards of 350 pounds, sweating profusely with a twitching eye. And I thought, well, you know.
Nothing like you.
You see, the radio people aren't getting the they're not seeing the humor in this.
He's a,
because
he's
I'm
a
only 285.
And he's nothing like
you. Nothing
okay,
like that.
All right.
So so I thought, I'm never going to get this part. I might as well have some do something to make it my own. So there was a line where I say, when my wife and I went to Versailles, where the king lived, that's the line in the scene. And I thought, I got to do something with this. So I said, Versailles, where the king lived.
On purpose.
On purpose.
Yeah.
And apparently when they sent the tape in and David Chase saw it, when he got to that line, he said, okay, that's the guy. And from then on, Little Carmine spoke in malaprops. And people still stop me on the street and will throw back some Little Carmine's malaprops.
That's brilliant.
You know,
that's
like
brilliant.
You said, we're caught in a stagmire instead of, you know. And it's really a great word, stagmire, and
great.
Very apropos for where we are.
What is the real word? Quagmire?
Quagmire. Oh, okay.
Just wanted to make
but
sure.
But stagmire, okay. It's like was stagnant in the, you know, stagnating in the...
Stuck in the mire. It's all perfect.
No, there were a million great. Yeah. I had a million of those, and the writers, Terry Winter especially, wrote some...
You should have a book, a little booklet of...
Well, oh, you could go all online. There's
yeah, but...
Oh, there's YouTube things of the best lines of Little Carmine. And
that's awesome.
Yeah. Because, I mean, there was one scene where I'm talking to James Gandolfini, may he rest in peace. And I say, and I had this dream, and I give my father this birthday present, and it's in this mellifluous box, you know, and they just gave me these lines that were just mellifluous. So people still will write to me, and they say, oh, that was so mellifluous, you know. Or,
great
you know,
word. Well,
it is.
Good.
Yeah.
So. It's like kind of like life change moment when you decided you're going to go for acting.
Oh yeah, okay. So
as a career.
After college, you know, I went to St. John's University in Queens
and New York.
Right.
Yeah.
And the idea was I was going to go to law school. Growing up, I always thought I was going to be a lawyer. But I was
were a lawyer.
I played a lawyer. Yeah. That made my mother so happy. But I hope my mother's not listening to this because she still thinks I'm a lawyer. But I don't think she's going to listen to
this. Ciao, mama.
She's 96.
Oh, God bless her.
Yeah.
Wow.
After college, I got a regular job. My father was a liquor salesman. I got a job as a liquor salesman. We have to drive to each liquor store. And then I had these little lumps in my groin. I thought it was a hernia. I went to the doctor, and they said, no, it's not a hernia. Your lymph nodes are swollen, and we have to do biopsies. So they did two biopsies on my lymph nodes. And it was about, in those days, it took a week to 10 days to get the results back. So it was kind of
nerve-wracking,
to say the least. And I was driving to one of the liquor store one day, and I looked at my knuckles were white because I was gripping the steering wheel.
You were stuck in a stagmire.
It was completely a stagmire. Well played. And then, and I remember I went to the doctor's office, and I opened up a magazine, and there was an article on De Niro. So I'll read this, and it says, Robert De Niro, dying of Hodgkin's disease. And it was a review for the Bang the Drum Slowly, where his character dies of Hodgkin's disease. So, and they thought I had Hodgkin's disease. So I'm driving, and I just thought, you know what? If I do have it, and I have like 2 years to live, I don't want to die a liquor salesman. I want to die an actor. Wow. So I turned the car around. I went in and I quit my job. And I asked one of the liquor stores if I could just work at the liquor store for $5 an hour, I think it was at the time, or less. And that way I could just go in, take acting classes, do what I needed to do plays. And I knew what my hours were because this other job, I'd go home at night and I'd be, you know, it stayed with me. I just wanted to be able to walk out when my time was up and So that was the moment that I decided I'm going to really, really pursue this, because I could have easily got caught up in that whole job thing and making more money. And
so what is the life question there? How do you want to die?
Okay. Or, I mean,
how do you want to be known when you die? I guess there is that.
Yeah. I just don't want it to be on the radio.
Wow. We don't either. So we're all in agreement. Okay. All right. So in the So I'm on Facebook and I see Ray post this story, and he said, "I've been saving this story." And I was, okay, who were you saving it for?
Well, because the story happened so many years ago that when it happened, I thought this would be a really funny story when I become a big star.
Yes.
And I win an Academy Award.
Yes.
This will be a great story to tell on Johnny Carson. And then,
right.
Well, okay, then Johnny's gone. So
it's with each Jay success, Leno.
Jay Leno. And then it's like, you know, and now I'm, you know, I don't know who I'm, you know, I don't know who it is. Somebody that's not even born yet. Maybe I'll get a chance to say it. So
no, it's here.
It's now.
Because you wrote it and you said, "I'm going to tell it."
Okay.
And so I said, "Why don't you come on the Life Changes show?"
This is how it happened. Right. Well, it happened because.
And you said, "Perché no?"
Did I? Did
you
I speak
actually
Italian?
Did.
Oh, because I actually
no,
thought
Italian.
You were from
Why
Italian.
Not?
I thought you were from Italy at the time because your name's slightly Italian, isn't
Filippo
it?
Filippo Voltaggio?
A little bit. Sounds a little Italian.
A little. Okay, the story. The
okay.
story.
So, Jonathan Demme, the great director Jonathan Demme, had just passed away at the time I wrote this story.
May and that's he rest what, in peace.
Yeah, really, just a brilliant director. I don't know if you've ever seen Stop Making Sense, the Talking Heads documentary concert film. It's just brilliant. And he directed Silence of the Lambs, of course. Everybody knows that. He directed yeah. Philadelphia. Everybody knows that. Something Wild. Melvin and Howard is a beautiful little film. He was just one of the great, great American directors and got the best performances. So early on, a friend of mine grew up with Jonathan and knew him, and Jonathan was having trouble casting a certain role in his film. So my friend said, "You know, why don't you see my friend Ray Abruzzo? He might be right for this part." So I studied the part and I went to meet Jonathan. It was just Jonathan and a producer in a room in a bungalow at one of the old Hollywood studios, and he worked me for an hour and a half. Mm. We did every scene in the movie. I mean, you could tell he was not just auditioning me. He was like working the film. He was working like a director and an actor. We were figuring stuff out together, and he'd rearrange furniture and he'd bring in props and he'd kind of rewrite it as we were going and try this and try this. And it was like, I've never experienced anything like this. Usually you read your part, thank you very much, you're out of there. Mm-hmm. This was an hour and a half of doing every scene in the movie. And it just felt so great. And I was driving home and I'm thinking, you know, if I don't get this part, it doesn't matter. Jonathan Demme really, really gave me a shot, you know.
Yeah.
But I really held hope. I thought I did pretty well. So a few days later, my brother-in-law is in New York, and he represented photographers at the time, and he was having lunch with this woman who at the time was Jonathan Demme's girlfriend by coincidence.
Oh.
She gets beeped at lunch, gets up from the table, goes to a payphone. Mm-hmm. Again, people that don't know what VHS is, they're not going to know what a payphone is. But
wow, how old is this story?
Yeah, yeah. So she comes back from the thing and she says, "Oh, that was Jonathan." Oh, my brother knows that I auditioned for the film, but doesn't say anything. And she said, "Jonathan just cast this part that he's been having so much trouble casting the part in this film." So my brother-in-law goes, "Oh, really? Who got it?" And she says, "Oh, I don't know, Ray something Italian."
Oh.
Ray Liotta. Needless to say, my brother-in-law had called me and said, "I think you got it. I think you got it. Jonathan said he's giving it to Ray something Italian." Nobody at the time knew who Ray Liotta was. They didn't even know Ray LaRomano. But wow. Now everybody knows Ray Liotta. Isn't that a great story?
And did you, and it came to you that it was...
It was not me.
But at first you thought it was you for sure.
Oh, yeah. Well, there was that period of time I was waiting for the call.
Yeah.
When is he going to tell me? He told his...
Ray something Italian.
Ray something... Who yeah.
And the movie was, of course...
Something Wild. And Ray Liotta was great in it, better than I ever would have been. I would have been better in Goodfellas than anything else he's done since then. But I'm kidding. That was a joke. No, he's terrific in that movie. Scary as hell.
Yeah. So. You got to tell the story.
I did. Thank you, Johnny.
Johnny. I can't do Johnny. I can't.
That would have been great.
All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. We're not done, though.
Oh, good. Okay.
No. But when we come back, we have just a short segment. And when we come back, I know you do a lot of, well, you speak to actors, you do acting courses or speaking engagements and all that. So you have a lot of wisdom to give. Already you've if anybody's been really listening, they've been able to get that you get what you're doing while you're doing it, and at least are trying to make sense of it for yourself and also for young actors and all that. So I think they're life lessons, period, not just for young actors. That's what I think, Ray, and I like it.
I'm not going to argue with you.
So when we come back, share with us a few minutes of some of that wisdom that you share with young actors. And after that, we're going to have Marine Terkazarian here in the studio singing live for us. All on the Life Changes Show when we come back after this.
The Little Dog That Could is the fantastically true story of a man and the little dog that came into his life as his mentor to help him understand the world beyond his human senses and to experience life, love, and healing beyond his human understanding. Best-selling author Filippo Voltaggio, who currently hosts the highly regarded Life Changes show, is an internationally known singer, speaker, and life coach. Filippo offers up his own story, how one little surprise package in fur and four legs transformed his life unexpectedly forever and furthered his path of self-discovery. In The Little Dog That Could, Filippo brings to life the meaning of the adage, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. Through the reading of this book, you will experience the journey of real miracles that transcend time, space, and logic while gaining practical tools that will help you navigate your way. The Little Dog That Could is available through Amazon and Barnes & Noble. For more information, visit thelittledogthatcould.com. That's thelittledogthatcould.com.
You are listening to The Life Changes Show, live from Studio NoHo on the BBS Radio Network. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as Mariel Hemingway, Shadow Stevens, Gary Zukav, and Kyle Cease, on our website at lifechangesshow.com. You can also follow us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and at Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We're back. I'm Filippo, sitting here with Mark and, of course, our guest, Ray Abruzzo. You know, you can find him all over the internet and actually in so many films, and I'll be watching something and I'm like, and there's Ray. Funny stuff. Actually, we didn't really get to talk too much about that because he's also a very funny actor, which not all actors can switch back and forth from being dramatic and being comedic. And that's a really hard thing to do that I bet he takes for granted, don't you?
I feel fortunate that I have a propensity. I like doing comedy.
Yeah.
And I like doing drama. And I feel fortunate. I know some actors have trouble going back and forth, but.
Or doing one or the other.
I mean, a lot of times it's not the actor's fault. They get typecast a certain way. You know?
Yeah.
But I've been fortunate in flying under the radar enough that I get to do both, you know.
So. You've been a doctor, a lawyer.
Yeah. A lot of lawyers, a lot of cops. There was about 10 years I played nothing but detectives.
A mob boss?
I did play a mob boss. The Sopranos, oddly enough, was the first time I ever played a mobster. I mean, I had done it in the theater, but that was the first time I ever played a mobster.
So you've lived almost so many different lives, in a sense, by doing some of these. You have to think like this character and all of that, and you're also reading somebody else's experience of this character. So what are some of the things that you've learned in the process that you could share with people?
Well, the most important thing is what you were talking about before, about having courses in improv for life kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's really no different. It becomes a muscle. You know,
nice.
And it really comes down to listening, you know. If you listen and then you respond honestly, that's all that acting is. Listening and responding honestly in that moment, in the imaginary circumstance given to you in the script. And life, it's not the imaginary circumstances.
Oh, it's, some of it is imaginary.
Some of it is, yeah. Well, yeah, that's true.
But they're imagining things all the time.
That's very true.
I'm not the guy you think you are. Yeah. I never said. Sorry. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
I don't know where I went.
But it really it really is just a matter of listening and responding and kind of getting out of your head and responding honestly. And I think a lot of comedy, a lot of improv comes from that. Stand-up comics do it. You know, sometimes they get in trouble. Bill Maher got in trouble recently because his comic mind just he just said without taking time to have that filter. So, but that's the muscle that you try to cultivate as an actor or a comedian or whatever, is breaking down that time between the stimulus and response and not getting in your head and just going and just reacting. Because right now you're listening to me and you're going, your head's moving. But you're not thinking about how you're reacting, what you're going to say. These are just organic responses you're having. And that's what life is and that's what acting is. So it's just about getting out of your head and being in the moment.
You know, that makes it sound so easy. And
it is. It's very easy. Anybody can act.
Yeah. Like anybody can be an opera singer.
Yes. Well, right. I did work for New York City Opera.
Actually, as a mute. And actually, she's an educator. So,
wow. So
you know, there's that.
Yeah.
Can I tell you what a pleasure it is to have you here with us
yes,
today?
Yes, you can.
Okay. It's a pleasure for you to come to
my house. My
not every day you get to have a hot throb on.
Yeah, hot throb.
Yes, Ray Abruzzo, hot throb. That's all you need.
That's
you know,
it.
Going
oh,
forward,
yeah, if
that's
only.
Your calling card. What a pleasure to have you here. Thank you for being with us on the show. Thank you for sharing your stories. There are so many more stories, and I hope that we'll have an opportunity to spend time and share Ray's brilliance and wonderful personality again.
Thank you.
Grazie, Ray. Thank you so much.
Grazie
and
a te.
Now, my pleasure. And now, one of the segments that we love the most here on this show is the Ask Dorothy segment. But before that, quick shout out.
Absolutely. Before that, we'd like to give a shout out to Energetic Alchemy, which is a life mastery course for all healing masters, practitioners, and novice levels who would like to go to the next level in matters, not if you've been practicing healing for years or have been thinking about starting a healing practice. This is an opportunity to remember what you truly are here to do and to advance and accelerate your healing skills no matter what your previous training has been. The Life Mastery Course, Energetic Alchemy. Go to loveandmiracles.org.
Nice.
Dorothy, Dave from Orlando asks, Dorothy, why does this thing called love hurt so much? My partner and I love one another, and yet we spend way too much time hurting one another with words and actions. What can we do to change the destructive pattern in our communications with each other?
What a great question, Dave. First, let us understand that love often is not what we've been taught to believe it is. Love is patience, kindness, compassion, forgiveness, inspiration, and benevolence. For it to be real and to be shared, one must find love for oneself before it can be shared with others. We are taught and programmed to believe that love is something we need from others, and then and only then will we be happy. We're taught to love our mothers and our fathers and our families and significant others no matter what their behavior is. We are taught that we are incomplete if we're not with a partner who loves us. The truth is that unless and until we can truly love ourselves without any conditions whatsoever, we cannot share love with anyone else. So many human beings have been taught that they are not deserving and not lovable, and this leads to reactive relationships. Misconceptions about love have been passed down from generation to generation. When one truly loves oneself and understands that nothing anyone says or does has anything to do with us personally, we can choose response rather than reaction. We can choose to remember that our lives are shaped by our programming, our stories, our beliefs, and that we always have the ability to make more elegant choices from a place of love and understanding. To find this place of love and understanding, we must begin to unlearn most of what we've been taught about love. One of the ways to truly express love and create better communication is to think before we speak. Let's ask ourselves if what we're about to say is really true. helpful, inspiring, necessary, and kind. If not, then you might want to not say it and find a more loving way to share your thoughts. Responding from a place of loving ourselves is something we can choose to do. If we ask ourselves if what we're about to say is really our truth and not just a reaction to some old stuff, if we think before we speak and speak in a way we would like to be spoken to, then we will not only have loving communications, we will not hurt the ones we love, and more importantly, we won't hurt ourselves.
Thank you, Dorothy.
Thank you, Dorothy. Something we can all learn from. If any of you in our listening audience have a question for Dorothy, please write us at askdorothy@lifechangesshow.com.
Well, now is the time that we have our opera singer joining us in the studio, Marine Terkazarian, after these messages on the Life Changes Show.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening. Someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorothyDonahue.com.
The Life Changes Show is a premier radio show presented by the Life Changes Network, which is a company whose team has dedicated their lives not only to positive change, but to helping others observe and embrace, honor, and even celebrate their own changes, thus enabling a more positive, inspired life and helping to create a more positive and inspired world. From everyday people, celebrities, corporate giants, and children, we are here to help and to serve. With heart, integrity, and experience, we bring our message and positive intent into your lives through the Life Changes Show, lifechangesnetwork.com, and through guest appearances on other inspiring shows and events. If you wish to learn more about Life Changes Life Coaching, a private consultation with one of us, corporate or live event appearances, or if you would like us to appear on your radio or TV shows, please email us at info@lifechangesnetwork.com.
We are back. I'm Filippo, sitting here with Mark, and of course our guest, Ray Abruzzo. And joining us in the studio, finally, is our musical guest. She is a soprano, an operatic singer, for those who don't know, a concert pianist, a voice professor, and the department chair at the Pasadena Conservatory. Well, there's more I want to say, but let me just say welcome, Marine Terkazarian, to our show.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
I'm so glad. I hope you weren't offended by anything that was said prior.
No, it was really wonderful. And what a coincidence to have a soprano star followed by a really
a soprano star. If you could say so yourself. And actually, indeed, because what I was going to share is that at the ripe old age of 1 year old, what was happening with you?
Well, I started speaking really early, and at one, I could actually sing in tune. So I still have recordings of that, and not just kind of like a, you know, kind of singing like babies do, but actually in tune singing.
Well, we believe you because by the age of five, you were doing what?
I actually was recording for the Armenian National Radio, and I debuted with the Armenian Philharmonic at the age of five, a song called The Know-It-All by Robert Petrosian, and it was the most funnest experience ever.
Well, interesting it's called The Know-It-All because it was actually, wasn't it written for you?
It was.
Did you ever make that connection?
Not
the
at
little
the time.
Miss Know-It-All?
No. I was delighted because at the time composers would write a lot of children's songs specifically for me to premiere, and I had a lot of fun to tour with them, actually, performing with me, playing the piano or doing little skits into different cities of Armenia. And so I'm so happy that my actual recordings from age of five are still aired. And it's really a bittersweet moment. And that was the beginning of, you know, me knowing that I, first of all, definitely want to be a musician. And having started piano lessons vigorously at the age of five, I still knew that singing was the one thing that I feel like is just second nature. And when I step on stage, I feel like I'm home and I can just stay on and sing and perform 24 hours a day. That's how I feel.
Well, I've had the pleasure of hearing and watching you perform live many times.
Yes.
And gotten to enjoy that along with many audiences and gotten to introduce you on stage, actually.
That's
which
true.
Has been a pleasure. And finally, here you are. And we've tried to coordinate you being on the show many times, but you're so busy with your students. You really dedicated. Tell us about what that means to you.
Yes. So I have been teaching actually for quite a while now, 25 years, and just 20 years at the conservatory. I just got an award of appreciation last week from Pasadena Conservatory of Music for 20 years of dedicated service, which feels great. I'm on the faculty both as a piano teacher and the chair of the voice. I also, on top of that, I'm a professor at Glendale Community College on both the piano and the vocal faculty, where I teach music 101, which is fundamentals, kind of like solfege and theory. I teach piano classes. I teach voice lessons. So a big chunk of my time is dedicated to teaching. And then whenever I get an opportunity between being a mom of two and then, you know, a teacher and a professor, I perform every chance I get, which is quite a lot during the year, actually. So I'm really happy.
So you're involved in music, I understand.
I breathe and live and, I don't know, eat music. Pretty much.
Well, awesome. You sing in many different languages.
I do.
And, of course, we probably know what your favorite is.
Of course, Italian.
Oh,
Italiano.
I thought you would say Armenian.
No, actually, Italian is the easiest language to sing in. Even though Armenian does have the same open vowels, mm-hmm. it is still complicated by the different consonants we've got. We've actually got 39 letters in our alphabet, so we have all the sounds you need. That's why we can pronounce very well in any language, Filippo. But okay. Italian is my favorite.
I don't know what that means by how she said that. I've introduced many Armenian performers on stage, and I think you're saying that I mispronounce them.
Am I saying that?
But you could do a better job with the Italian names? Okay.
I totally could.
Well, you do a great job at so much, and it's great to have you here. Now, you've chosen a very special piece to sing today, which is very exciting. So tell us, this has never happened on our show before. Actually, I don't even know if we've ever had a soprano, an opera singer, right? I think this is the first time.
I think so.
I mean, a female. We've had a tenor or two. But this is, you're going to be singing in Czech.
I am going to be singing in Czech, and it is from Dvorak's opera called Rusalka, which means the mermaid. So the story is based on the, you know, the Little Mermaid of Hans Christian Andersen, the story we all know. And it is the aria of Rusalka, the mermaid, the main heroine, singing to the moon, urging the moon. This is after she has met the prince and she has fallen in love with him. So she is singing at night after everyone is asleep, looking at the moon and saying urging the moon to go and find his beloved, the moon, who can actually wander around and see the whole world and peek into people's windows and, you know, go awaken the memories of her in the prince's mind. And if the prince doesn't remember, put the thought in his head and make him remember their encounter earlier. And she, at the end of it, and you can hear the music change, she urges him not to fall asleep and go do what she's asking him to do and not to fall asleep. That's how she ends it.
Wow. Okay. Now, I don't want to ruin this, but it is an opera. The opera doesn't end happy, does it, like the Disney show?
No, the opera doesn't end happy. It stays close to the story of the actual fairy tale, in which the Little Mermaid, you know, the mermaid, loses her voice completely and she cannot walk, so she's just she's dropped into the water and she remains a mute mermaid. Sadly.
I know somebody that could have played that part. He was. Wait, he actually. It's got all the elements because you played a female gorilla.
I did.
And a mute something. You could have combined the two. You could have been a mute mermaid at the end
who
of the.
Who was on The Sopranos? Who was on The Sopranos?
Yeah, that totally could have happened.
Well, thankfully, you're going to sing the part while she still has her voice,
yes,
right?
Yes, okay. She does.
All right, so perfect. And so here is, and this is Tchaikovsky, right?
I'm sorry, Dvorak. This is Dvorak.
Oh, okay. Can we strike that from the record? I can't, but I've been doing that when you came here. We were talking before the show, and I was mixing up all my composers.
Yeah, well, that's okay.
And operas.
Well, you know, funny that you mentioned Tchaikovsky. It's very close, kind of in style, because of the romanticism and also the language. I speak Russian fluently, and Czech is very easy to pronounce to me, because a lot of the elements, even the reading of it, they do have these little Czechs and accents and so on and so forth. But it's super easy because it's close to Russian. So, you know, you correlating it with Tchaikovsky, it's not that far-fetched.
Right. My mind thinks in amazing ways
yes.
like that. And actually, before we get into the song, we will hear the song. We will. Before we do, since you speak Armenian fluently and English fluently, and Russian fluently, can we hear, like you say, I am Marine Terkazaryan, and I'm happy to be here on the Life Changes Show, or something like that, in both languages?
Sure. Բարի երեկո, ես Մարինե Տերղազարյանն եմ, շատ ուրախ եմ այսօր գտնվելով Life Changes Show-ում և ձեզ համար կատարելով Դվորժակի արիան Ռուսալկա օպերայից.
That was Armenian.
That was Armenian.
I recognize it.
Yes.
Okay, now let's hear the Russian.
Добрый вечер, товарищи. Меня зовут Марина Терказарян. Я сопрано. Я сегодня буду петь для вас арию Русалки из оперу Русалка Дворжака.
Beautiful. And that was Russian.
That was
Russian. I could tell. And thank you. That's fun. All right. So now here is Marine Terkazaryan singing live Song to the Moon from the opera Ruzalka by Dvorak live on the Life Changes show here at Studio NoHo.
Слушалиц сказни, а цветов вспоменьков взбуди. Лисичку не сосни, не сосни.
Wow. Wow.
Brava.
Brava indeed. How do you say brava in Armenian?
Apres.
Apres?
Apres.
Apres. Apres.
Wow.
Or getses.
Get set?
Get ses.
Oh, get ses. Okay. Yes. I was thinking like, on your mark, get set. Ses.
Go. Get ses. Go.
Marine Terkazarian, thank you so much. We have a link to the Pasadena Conservatory organization on our website where you could learn more about her. Your music is on, I mean, where, tell us more. We could find you and see you perform,
etc. You can find me on YouTube. You can also find me on any of the faculty recitals at both at Glendale Community College and Pasadena Conservatory of Music. You can find me performing in the community, both in the Armenian and just in the community of Pasadena and Glendale and, you know, elsewhere. A lot with the USC Friends of Armenian Music. That's an organization who provided scholarship for me when I was a student at USC. They keep inviting me to all kinds of events and concerts and all-star performances. I have a few coming up this fall for the conservatory. We're doing a big Mansions in Music fundraiser concert, which is in beautiful mansions in Pasadena area, where I will be performing a Russian program by Rachmaninoff, Rimsky-Korsakov, and Tchaikovsky.
And so people can learn about those on your website? On your Facebook page?
They can learn it on my Facebook page and also at the Pasadena Conservatory of Music.
Okay. Which we have the link directly for that on our page for Marine Terkazarian. And of course, we should mention the Enlightenment Music Series, how we came to know each other at a couple of those concerts. So what a pleasure to have you here. Thank you so much, Marine Terkazarian.
Thank you. It was a delight and a pleasure to be here, Filippo.
And how beautiful to have you perform that piece live so beautifully here on our show. And Ray Abruzzo, once again, what a pleasure to have had you here. What a show this has been.
It's been, I think we should thank the band, too, weren't they?
the orchestra. that was an orchestra. It was a track. But we should thank our technical director, Brent Hahn, for making us all sound so good in here. Thank you, Brent.
Thank you, Brent.
And we also want to thank our program manager, Doug Newsom at BBS Radio Network. And, well, that's our show. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Donahue, our producer, Mark Legere, I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you, as your life changes like ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at The Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.